Oktra Foundation presents the Oktra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Oktra AI. Okay, let's unpack this. Today we're diving deep into a book that, well, utterly revolutionized how we think about ourselves and how we tell our own stories, Jean-Jacques Rousseau's The Confessions. It's an autobiographical work published after his death, actually in two parts, 1782 and 1789, and it's really considered one of the very first modern autobiographies, definitely a foundational text of romantic literature.
Absolutely, and the man himself, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, born in Geneva, 1712, died in 1778, Swiss-born, but, you know, a huge figure in French philosophy.
Yeah.
Writer, composer.
A real Renaissance mind, you could say.
Yeah, exactly. His ideas were radical. I mean, seriously radical. Yeah. They profoundly influenced both the Enlightenment, kind of ironically, and the Romantic movement that followed.
So what's the hook here? Yeah. Why The Confessions?
Well, what's fascinating right from the start is how Rousseau opens the book. He makes this incredibly audacious declaration. He says, I have resolved on an enterprise which has no precedent, and which, once complete, will have no imitator.
Wow. No pressure, then.
Right. He wasn't just, you know, writing down his memories like famous people did back then, saints, kings, statesmen, people with exemplary lives. No, Rousseau was doing something revolutionary. It was an act of self-exposure.
Exposing what, exactly?
Exposing his inner self. He shattered that mold of just presenting the public achievements. He argued that underneath all the social stuff, the veneer, there was an essentially good and noble soul. And he believed you could reveal this through, well, total transparency.
Even the bad stuff.
Especially the bad stuff, in a way. He dared to dig deep into his feelings, his flaws, his secret shames. He thought that by exposing everything, warts and all, he could demonstrate this fundamental goodness. And maybe, just maybe, inspire others to find it in themselves, too.
So this isn't just a dusty old book.
Not at all. It's, like you said, an archaeological dig into the human condition. It provides, you know, surprising insights into psychology, into our own lives that still feel incredibly relevant today.
Okay, an archaeological dig into one of history's most complex minds. Let's start digging. Right. Where does his story begin? Because you mentioned themes of loss and abandonment right from the start.
Indeed. His beginnings were truly tumultuous. Born in Geneva, 1712. His mother died just 9 days after his birth.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He actually called this the first of my misfortunes. It arguably gave him this lifelong sense of maybe guilt and certainly a deep yearning for the maternal love he never had.
And his father.
His father, Isaac Rousseau, was a watchmaker. Deeply affected by the loss, apparently, he swung between being overwhelmingly affectionate and then neglectful. So Jean-Jacques' early education wasn't really formal schooling.
What was it then?
It was reading. Lots of reading. Romantic novels, classical histories like Plutarch. His father immersed him in these, so his imagination was probably more at home with, you know, Roman heroes than the everyday realities of Geneva.
That sounds quite isolating, in a way.
It probably was. And this sort of unconventional, dreamy childhood, it ended very abruptly. When Jean-Jacques was 10, his father got into a quarrel, fled Geneva, and basically abandoned him to relatives.
10 years old?
10 years old, yeah. And this early betrayal, you can see how it planted the seeds for his lifelong issues with authority, with trust, with feeling like he belonged anywhere.
That's a really rough start. How did these experiences, this sense of injustice and abandonment, start to shape his thinking, his philosophy later on?
Oh, profoundly. Take the abandoned comb incident he writes about. Happened when he was about 11, living with the pastor Lambercier.
Okay, what happened?
He was falsely accused of breaking a comb. He denied it passionately, apparently with tears, but he was punished anyway. And this wasn't just, you know, a kid getting unfairly blamed. For Rousseau, it became almost a symbol, a blueprint for how society itself worked.
So a small injustice becomes a metaphor for larger ones.
Exactly. It seared itself into his memory.
Yeah.
Introduced him to the brutal reality of injustice, the arbitrary power of institutions. He learned that telling the truth didn't necessarily protect you from those in charge. It definitely fueled his suspicion of any system that could just crush an individual like that.
And his education after that? You mentioned apprenticeships.
Yeah, they didn't go well. He tried being a notary, an engraver. But he kept chafing under what he saw as harsh treatment, led to small rebellions, a growing desire for freedom. You can see a pattern emerging.
A pattern of disillusionment, it sounds like. So what does a young man like that do, especially without a clear path?
Well, it leads to this really dramatic moment, an act of self-liberation, you could call it. He's 16 at 1728. He's returning late from a walk outside Geneva, finds the city gates locked for the night.
Okay, so he's stuck outside.
Right. And instead of waiting, facing his master's anger, facing this future he clearly didn't want, he just walks away. Turns back on Geneva, his birthplace, his whole predetermined life.
Just like that, 16 years old.
Just like that. A spontaneous act of defiance, really, and a yearning for something else. This decision led him to Anne of Sessy and, crucially, to Madame de Warens.
Ah, Mama. Right.
That's her. He called her Mama, and she became much more than just a patron. She was a mother figure, yes, but also his teacher and eventually his lover. A very complex relationship.
So this is where his real education begins.
Absolutely. Under her wing, his true intellectual awakening starts. He becomes an autodidact, self-taught, devours philosophy, science, literature. He spends these idyllic years with her at Les Charmettes, her country home.
Les Charmettes sounds peaceful.
It seems to have been. This period fostered his really deep connection to the natural world, which becomes huge in his philosophy, and also what he called his sentimental education.
Sentimental education? What does that mean?
It wasn't about book learning. It was about learning to trust feelings, intuitions, as guides to truth. This is a really important counterpoint to the Enlightenment's focus on pure, cold reason.
So feelings as a source of knowledge.
Exactly. The idea that genuine moral understanding comes not just from logic, but from, you know, your gut feelings, your emotional experiences, especially those connected to nature and authentic relationships, it becomes central to his whole philosophy later on.
Okay, so after these years of wandering this unique self-education, he ends up in Paris. But you said it wasn't easy at first.
No, definitely not. He struggled. He tried to get a new system of musical notation accepted, but it failed. That was a blow to his pride. Yeah. But he eventually found his way into the intellectual circles. He got connected with Diderot, with the big encyclopedia project. But the real breakthrough, the moment everything changed, was what he called the Illumination.
The Illumination. Sounds dramatic.
It was. This is in 1749. He's walking to Vincennes to visit Diderot, who was actually imprisoned there for a bit. On the way, he reads an announcement for an essay contest from the Academy of Dijon.
And the question.
The question was, has the restoration of the sciences and arts contributed to the purification of morals?
Okay, standard Enlightenment era question, you'd think.
Right. But Rousseau's reaction was anything but standard. He describes this sudden overwhelming vision like, all at once I felt myself dazzled by 1,000 sparkling lights. I saw another universe and became another man.
Whoa. And his answer?
His answer was a massive no. He argued that civilization, the sciences, the arts, far from purifying morals, they actually corrupt our natural goodness. This was completely paradoxical, flew right in the face of Enlightenment optimism.
And that essay.
That essay, his discourse on the sciences and arts, won the prize. Boom. Overnight, he goes from this obscure, struggling musician to a famous and, yeah, deeply controversial public intellectual. His ideas rocked the establishment.
That's an incredible turnaround. One essay changes everything. What came next after this intellectual birth?
It kicked off a period of intense creativity, a whole series of radical works that cemented his fame and really stirred the pot.
Like what?
Well, he followed up with a discourse on the origin of inequality. This wasn't just observing inequality. It was a direct attack. He argued private property was the root of moral corruption and social division. Revolutionary stuff.
Challenging the very gazes of society.
Absolutely. Then came Julie, or The New Heloise, this hugely popular novel about love and virtue. Then Emile, his treatise on education, totally radical, arguing for a natural, experience-based approach focused on the child.
Still influential today, Emile.
Hugely. And, of course, The Social Contract, with that unforgettable opening line, man is born free, and everywhere he is in chains.
Iconic. But you mentioned a contradiction in his personal life during this productive time.
Yes, and it's a huge one, a really troubling one. During roughly this same period, between about 1746 and 1752, he and his long-term companion, Thérèse Levasseur, they had 5 children.
Okay.
And they abandoned all 5 of them to Foundling Hospital.
What? The man who wrote Emile?
Exactly. Man. It's a devastating contradiction. He gives reasons in the Confessions of Poverty, believing the state would care for them better, but he also calls it the infamous and damning confession. Admits the profound guilt.
That's hard to reconcile.
It is. It's a deep, troubling stain. And his enemies, later on, used it against him mercilessly, especially given his fame as this theorist of education and natural virtue.
So success clearly didn't bring him peace. It sounds like it brought the opposite persecution, isolation. How did he handle that later part of his life?
Yeah, peace was definitely not on the agenda. Emile and the social contract were condemned, publicly burned in Paris and Geneva in 1762. Warrants issued for his arrest.
So he became a fugitive.
Pretty much. He had to flee. Went to Switzerland, then briefly to England, invited by the philosopher David Hume. But that relationship soured spectacularly, too.
Why? What happened?
Well, Rousseau's temperament, always sensitive, became increasingly paranoid. Now, some of it was justified. He did have powerful enemies like Voltaire. Diderot eventually turned against him. But there was likely some mental instability compounding it. He ended up having these bitter public quarrels, accusing former friends of plotting against him. He became profoundly isolated.
That sounds incredibly difficult.
It must have been. And it was during these years, this intense period of persecution, feeling utterly alone, roughly 1765 to 1770, that he started writing the Confessions.
As a way to fight back?
Partly, yes. It was his ultimate attempt at self-justification, absolutely. His final court of appeal to posterity. He wanted to lay himself bare, flaws and all, hoping people would finally understand him, maybe vindicate him. He died in 1778, leaving this extraordinary, complex document behind. He'd managed to turn his personal pain into something universal.
It's clear his life was just a whirlwind of contradictions, drama, brilliance. Let's try and distill it. Beyond the biography, what were the core beliefs really driving him? What was his fundamental worldview?
At the very heart of it is that fundamental paradox we mentioned. Humans are naturally good, but civilization corrupts them. He didn't buy into the idea of original sin or inherent human flaws. For him, the problems came from society, its structures, its inequalities, its focus on appearances.
And connected to that was his emphasis on feeling.
Absolutely. The primacy of feeling, sensibility. This is a major challenge to Enlightenment rationalism. He wasn't dismissing reason entirely, but he argued strongly that our emotions, our intuitions, were vital guides to truth. Remember that quote, "I felt before I thought."
Right. This is the common lot of humanity. I experienced it more than others.
Exactly. It validated the inner emotional world in a way that philosophy hadn't really done before. Feelings weren't just noise. They were a form of knowing.
And nature played a big role, too.
A huge role. Nature, for him, was a moral and spiritual force. It was a sanctuary from corrupt society, a place to find peace, solace, even a sense of the divine. He constantly sought refuge in natural settings. And related to this was his deep suspicion of artifice.
Artifice, like social pretense.
Precisely.
Yeah.
He despised the performative world of the Parisian salons, all the polite hypocrisy, the focus on wit and appearance over genuine feeling. He saw it as fake, superficial, his own awkwardness in those settings. He almost framed it as a sign of his moral integrity, his refusal to play the game.
And the Confessions was the ultimate expression of that authenticity.
Exactly. His ultimate act of tearing off the mask. Now, his motivations for writing it were complex. Definitely self-justification was a big part, defending himself against enemies, exposing this perceived plot.
Understandable, given the persecution.
Sure, but it was also this radical experiment in honesty, daring to show everything, even the shameful stuff, to prove that underlying goodness. And it was deep psychological self-exploration, trying to understand himself by tracing the roots of his feelings back to childhood, this chain of secret emotions.
Almost like early psychoanalysis.
In a way, yeah. And it, finally, you could see it as a philosophical demonstration, using his own life story as the evidence for his theories about the natural man corrupted by society.
Okay, this raises a question. How did this man, with these grand ideas about authenticity and natural goodness, actually cope with all the adversity? The persecution, the accusations, the intense isolation?
Well, his responses were often contradictory, just like the man himself. On one hand, he could be incredibly defiant. When Emile and the social contract were banned, he chose exile rather than retracting his ideas. That shows real intellectual integrity.
He stood by his beliefs.
He did. But on the other hand, he could be deeply self-pitying, nursing grievances, becoming consumed by paranoia, seeing plots everywhere. He wasn't a simple hero figure.
So a mix of strength and perhaps fragility.
I think that's fair. He definitely used solitude and communion with nature as his refuge. That's where he recharged, found solace, and got the energy to keep writing. And ultimately, his most profound act of coping, of resilience, was the writing itself. The Confessions transformed his personal suffering into this enduring, universal story. That was his way of processing it, of fighting back, of trying to make sense of it all.
It really seems his life was shaped by these intense turning points. Let's focus on three critical moments, three events that you'd say dramatically altered his course, like mini stories that changed everything for him.
Okay, three pivotal moments. First, definitely leaving Geneva at 16 in 1728, We talked about him finding the gates locked. That decision to just walk away, abandon his apprenticeship, his home, that was huge.
More than just running away.
Much more. It was an act of self-liberation. It cut him off from a predictable, probably stifling future.
Mm-mm.
You could say that's the moment the restless, self-creating individual was born. Without that decision, his unique education with Madame de Warren's, his whole philosophical journey, none of it happens. It was a radical break.
Choosing the unknown path. Okay, what's the second one?
The second has to be the illumination on the road to Vincennes in 1749. That moment reading the essay contest announcement, that sudden, overwhelming vision that civilization corrupts.
The thousand sparkling lights.
Exactly. This wasn't just an idea he reasoned out. It was this intense, emotional, almost mystical revelation. It instantly crystallized his entire philosophy, fused his personal experiences of injustice with a grand theory. It gave him his life's mission. It launched his career and made him the thinker we remember, his intellectual birth, really.
A lightning bolt moment. Mm. And the third, this one feels like it carries a different kind of weight.
It does. The third, and you can't talk about Rousseau honestly without confronting it, is the abandonment of his children, roughly between 1746 and 1752, placing all five children in the foundling hospital.
Yeah.
This was, without doubt, the great moral catastrophe of his life. The contrast with Emile, his philosophy of nurturing education, is just jarring, horrifying even. It left him with this profound, inescapable guilt, a deep, unhealable wound, as he essentially admits.
And his enemies seized on it.
Relentlessly. It became the prime evidence for accusations of hypocrisy. He tried to explain it, justify it, but the act itself and the profound disconnect with his own stated ideals haunted him and stains his legacy. It really highlights the complex, often contradictory nature of people, even brilliant thinkers.
These moments weren't just personal milestones then. They directly fed into his philosophy, his self-perception, and how we still grapple with him today.
Absolutely. They are lenses through which you can understand his work, his motivations, and the enduring questions he forces us to ask.
So let's bring it back to us. What does Rousseau's incredibly dramatic, contradictory, brilliant life mean for us today? What are the human lessons we can take away, especially now in our own complicated times?
Well, first, I think his commitment to radical self-disclosure, even the really ugly stuff like the stolen ribbon incident.
Ah, yes, where he blamed the maid, Marion.
All right, he stole it, got caught, and blamed this innocent young woman out of fear. It's a cringe-worthy story he tells on himself, but it shows that real authenticity requires courage. In our age of curated social media feeds, his willingness to expose his worst moments is a challenge. It says genuine integrity means facing uncomfortable truths about yourself, not just polishing your image.
It's about owning the flaws, not just the highlight.
Exactly. Second, his detailed focus on how early experiences, that comb incident, the abandonments, shaped his adult personality and thinking. It really anticipated modern psychological understanding. It drives home the lesson that childhood experiences shape adult life. The past isn't just past, it's baked into who we are, and early injustice can echo for decades.
The roots run deep.
They do. Third, his honest look at his own mixed motives. How he could have good intentions but act selfishly. How love and resentment could get tangled up. Think about the children again, or even his relationships. It teaches us about the complexity of human motivation. It pushes back against easy moral judgments and reminds us that people, even great thinkers, are messy, contradictory bundles of desires and fears.
Nobody's purely good or purely bad.
Pretty much. And finally, the Confessions itself shows us that memory is a story we tell ourselves. He's constantly revisiting events, reinterpreting them, trying to make sense of his life from his current perspective. It's not a perfect recording. It's a creative act of constructing an identity, of finding meaning, which is something we all do, consciously or not.
That tension he lived with between the private self and the public persona feels incredibly modern. That struggle to bridge the gap. Maybe that's why he still speaks to us so powerfully.
I think that's exactly right. His audacity in trying to close that gap, however imperfectly, is what makes him endlessly compelling and, yeah, sometimes infuriating too.
Okay, let's wrap up this deep dive into Rousseau's world. If you had to distill it down, what are three powerful takeaways for our listeners to carry forward?
Okay, three takeaways. First, an emotional insight. Rousseau really shows us that our deepest sense of self often gets forged, not just in our successes, but maybe even more so in our moments of shame, guilt, and secret longing. His story is a powerful testament to how memory haunts us, like the ghost of Marion, that maid he wronged, who he says followed him his whole life. It proves our conscience can be the most unforgiving historian, and true self-knowledge often means facing those ghosts.
Wow, that's powerful. Okay, second.
Second, an intellectual insight. Before Rousseau, a lot of philosophy felt like this abstract game of pure reason. He would basically crash the party, insisting that feeling is a form of thinking, that our intuition holds truths that logic alone can miss. And his core idea that we're born good and corrupted by society, that was a philosophical earthquake, it fundamentally changed how we debate politics, education, human nature. Its tremors are still felt today.
He shifted the very ground of philosophy. And the third.
And finally, a universal insight. We all live with that gap, don't we? Between who we really are in private, messy, contradictory, full of desires, and the face we put on for the world. Rousseau's entire life, as documented in the Confessions, is this monumental, painful, sometimes beautiful attempt to close that gap. He shows us that the hard work, the often embarrassing work of truly knowing yourself, is maybe the most important journey we can take, even if the person we find isn't the perfect hero we might wish for.
Rousseau's Confessions really does invite us to ask ourselves, what truths about ourselves have we been afraid to confess, even just silently to ourselves? In a world that pushes conformity, that rewards the polished image, his courageous, messy, deeply human journey towards self-knowledge is a powerful reminder. A reminder to value authenticity, maybe, over appearance, and to find the uncomfortable beauty in our full, flawed humanity. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep learning. Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.